Working with Couples in Conflict, Essential Skills. Dr. Susan Heitler is a clinical psychologist at Rose Medical Center in Denver and author of the integrative psychotherapy book, From Conflict to Resolution. In this three-part series, Dr. Heitler clarifies a conceptual framework for therapy with couples and demonstrates intervention techniques. Part 2, Symptom Reduction, Guiding, and Coaching Techniques.
Somebody asked me, well, are you going to deal with any, like, real pathology? And again, I go back to the... Actually, it was someone who wasn't here at the very beginning. The key to all of this is that unless you know very clearly what healthy movement from conflict to resolution looks like, it's real hard to guide patients along that route. Now we are going to be more challenged because we're going to actually do something that's like what we actually do in therapy. Let's look at a quickie overview of the process of couples therapy. There are three parts. Part one, getting rid of excessive symptoms. Part two, guiding from conflict to resolution. The specific conflicts that that couple has. And part three is learning the skills, coaching the skills, so people can deal with subsequent conflicts on their own. Now, coming from Colorado here, I think of this in terms of a ski instructor metaphor. A ski instructor starts by checking out that his whole group has all their equipment okay. He would not take people up the hill if they had clearly faulty equipment. Part two, once he gets up the hill, he has a choice. He can either guide them safely down the trail and make sure they're all going to make it down okay. And then how will they feel at the end? Oh, just terrific, we made it down. Or he'll use the route coming down, that same trail, but as an opportunity to teach skills chunk by chunk along the way. So as therapists, we want to be sure in every session that we know which we're doing. Are we eliminating symptoms? Are we working our way through issues? Or are we developing skills? Do we need to get rid of symptoms? You need to alleviate symptoms either if the symptoms are dangerous, if they're making it difficult for the person to function outside of the office, or difficult to function in the office, in the therapy, or they're just too troubling for the person. And when I say get rid of symptoms, that may mean medication, that may mean an alcohol treatment program, something that gets the person to a phase where they can be workable. Okay, that's an assessment we make at the beginning of couples treatment. It's also on our mind anytime somebody walks in the office and there's clearly a need to focus on symptoms because they can't seem to proceed. So, for instance, I have a couple that I told them, I'm sorry, I won't work with you. I can't work with you as a couple unless you get some medication. And the man was not happy about hearing this because he had a paranoid delusional system. As far as he was concerned, the problem was all her. If she would just shape up, and he was glad to come to session so that she would understand how she had to shape up. I'm not going to put myself in the position of wasting their money. It's silly. You have to be clear. Look, we have to treat this first. And he got very angry at me, but you've got to face some of these things. Similarly, and this is one that I think as psychologists, we tend to under-treat, that if you have somebody who's repeatedly getting upset and upset during the week, not making it through without multiple upsets, and who came from a background of childhood trauma, often those people have got to be on an antidepressant, and then they stabilize enough that then these techniques become appropriate. And I personally found in the last few years I've been using medications much more for these people who they don't quite fit the borderline diagnosis. They're higher functioning than that, but they just get upset a lot. They're emotionally fragile. That's the second group I caution you to be sure you're treating the symptoms. Okay, that aside, let's go into the other two parts, the coaching and the guiding. In order to set yourself up to do the guiding, you need two things. At the beginning of treatment, you want to generate a laundry list. What is it? I'm mixing metaphors a little bit. My English teacher would be horrified. You all know what a laundry list is, right? How many of you have ever seen a laundry list? That's one of those phrases that we all know, but we've never seen one. That I went with a group of psychologists a couple of years ago to China, and in the hotel, they actually had a laundry list. I was so happy. A list of everything you could possibly own, and you had to check off how many of each you were putting in the bag. So there really is such a thing as a laundry list. Okay. That is a laundry list in therapy. If we stuck with the ski metaphor, it would be like the number of trails they need to go down to feel finished. Or the other metaphor I like is it's like weeds in your garden. That there's a certain number of weeds that we've just got to get pulled so the garden really can breathe healthy. However you want to conceptualize it, each couple that comes in for treatment usually has a certain number of issues that they know they fight about. So you want to start therapy with asking them, what are the issues that are either issues that you might fight about or issues that you can't talk about? And those are usually really interesting ones. Okay, so you have the laundry list. The other source of the conflicts is the issue, the question that you also want to ask at the beginning of each session, which is, what do you want to focus on today? Was there something that came up during the week that's of particular import now that's important to deal with? So your issues can come either from the laundry list or from things that went on during the week or came up during the week. What you do know is that by the end of therapy, the laundry list should be pretty much all checked off. And you usually will have the sense that issues aren't coming up every week. And it's not that potential problems aren't coming up. It's that the couple now knows how to deal with them successfully so they don't turn into what feel like conflicts. Okay, so that's how we get the data. And therapy begins, each session begins with setting an explicit agenda. If you're not explicit about what the laundry item is that you're wandering, you're already in trouble. It's going to be hard to guide successfully. That's essentially stage one of the conflict resolution process, getting out what the issue is. Okay. The other thing you would note in your first session with a patient is, what is their typical process? Thinking back on those four detours we looked at, is it a fight-fight interaction? Do they get into dominant submissives where one tends to be attacking and one tends to be giving up? What is their pattern? And you also will have noted early on, what are the skills that they tend to have as consistent deficits? So you have your map of what needs to be done right from the beginning of treatment. Okay, with that in mind, in any individual session, there are two overall frameworks, both within, well, let's say overall for therapy, after the symptoms have been looked at. One is where you start with the laundry list, and you begin walking couples through. By walking through, I'm thinking of, if you think of Seligman's experiments with dogs, and that got depressed, and I'm not going to recite it now, I'm going to assume you know. If not, you can check in the book that describes it more fully. When his dogs got depressed and lay down and didn't want to move, the only way he could get them to move again, to get out of a painful situation, was to stand them up and physically walk each leg step by step, and then they'd work their way out. That's kind of what we're doing as we're walking patients through these issues one by one. We're guiding them very carefully. This is your position at the beginning. This is your position. Okay. Now let's explore what the concerns are on both sides, and let's get those out. As you walk a couple through at least one or two of their troubling issues, what begins to happen? Oh, the system quiets down. Now, if you can also add, as systems therapists do, an understanding of why these issues are coming up at this time, an explanation of why they're having trouble, that also helps the system quiet down. As the system quiets down, then you can begin to do more skill development. So that's the structure that you use overall for therapy for some patients, particularly patients where there is a pressing issue that's got everybody upset right at the outset, or one or two or three pressing issues that have people upset. Now, there's an alternative structure, and that's where, right from the beginning, you focus on the coaching rather than the guiding. That's where the process is the key problem. And this is the couple that has a laundry list of 1,324 items. That is, anything they talk about erupts into a conflict. Then you know, whoops, it's not the content, it's the process that's the problem. And you often are best off just starting on communication skills or conflict resolution skills from day one. And I've often found that this explanation to couples, oh, I can see you two really have a lot of fondness for one another. You just have skill deficits, and so you keep bumping into each other, sort of like people who don't know how to quite have the skills of dancing keep tripping each other and kicking each other by mistake, even though they quite like each other. So until you've got a few skills there, you're going to feel some tension. So let's go right to work on the skills. Okay, that may be what you tell them. It's obviously not as simple as that. In addition to the behavioral skills, there's a whole bunch of attitudes and concerns that underlie those skills that are motivating that bad behavior. So you know you're going to have to get at those as well. And those are the techniques we're going to be looking at now in this section and in part three as well. Okay, with that preface of the overview, let's go back to our couple. And this time, Hal and Heidi are not going to be a nice young couple. This time, they are going to be a very nasty, nasty couple. They've been married a good, 10 or 15 years. And they have their set ways. And included in their set ways have been, for many years, a total inability to get past dialogue, that is, one person says A and the next person says B, without totally polarizing and erupting. That's the way this couple was when they first came in. Lovely people, but as soon as they came next to each other, boom, the sparks came out. Now, they actually are quite, in this instance that we're acting out now, they're quite a ways along in their treatment. And they've gotten to the point where they can actually have 5-10 minute talks, and I used to sit there and time them to see how long they could go before they'd fight. Which is actually very gratifying. But at this point, they're at the point where they can talk about something that happened during the week. So we're sitting in therapy. I think I won't sit, but let's pretend that I'm sitting here in the therapy room with the two of you. They're at right angles to one another. You want to hook your chairs around, not facing each other, because that feels confrontational, but at right angles to one another. I have a small round table, and they are at right angles with the small table in the corner between them. And then I sit with rolling chairs in any peace conference. The architecture of the peace table is very important. So I sit always in a chair with rollers. You need a chair with rollers because as couples get better, you want to be able to roll back and let them dialogue between each other as much as possible. When you can sit back a lot of the session, then you know they're really getting close to termination. When they get in trouble, you want to be able to roll right up there and come in and be there to help them and facilitate it. Okay, so they've had an argument this week. And although they've been getting along quite well, they come in now and they're clearly bugged at each other. So what did you want to focus on this week?
Well, I have a great concern about what happened the other night in the shopping mall after we had had a very nice dinner. And Well, I wanted to get my hair cut.
Well, excuse me just a sec. Rather than talk to me, talk with each other and see how far along you can get figuring out what happened and coming to a common understanding and sorting it through.
It was a nice dinner, and I...
It was a nice dinner.
I just wanted to stop and get my hair cut. I don't have time during the week to...
Okay, I'm going to stop you just for a minute. You know, I can see that you two are kind of upset with each other now. At the same time, you've had a long period of time where you've gotten along together really well. See if you can take a deep breath and just calm yourself down for a bit. And rather than carry on the battle now that went on there, let's see if you two can use your skills to sort through what happened and try to understand it. See how far you can get at that.
It was a nice dinner. It was a long day at the mall.
I was tired.
But I wanted to get my hair cut, Hal. I don't have time to...
Hold on. Let's take another deep breath. Let me help you off here a little bit. Because I can see the tensions aren't going to just disappear that quickly.
Okay, step back. If you're guiding, and this is what we're doing now, is we're in the guiding phase. I'm not going to work on their skills at all. I just want to get them on the track. So I tried one technique, didn't quite work. So we try another technique, which is that I'm going to prompt what I want each of them to say. Try to set them up to do it right so that then I can praise them for that instead of having them just do it wrong all the time and correct it. Okay, well, maybe, Hal, do you want to describe a little what, from your perspective, went on that?
We had a nice day, and it was a lovely dinner.
And what was troubling for you?
I was tired. I wanted to get home. We'd been out all day. I got a couple of things at home that I had needed to get done, and...
And then, excuse me for cutting it short, but how about if you pick up on that? So you were in the mall, and you'd had a nice afternoon and a nice dinner, and then you were tired. And then what happened?
And then I simply asked if I could stop at the beauty parlor and get my hair cut. That was all.
Okay, wait a minute. You don't need to apologize for it. So you're saying, so what I'm doing is detoxifying as we go along, so we can get the data out, so we can walk them through. Okay, so you wanted to get your hair cut, and what happened then? You said something to him, or?
Well, he told me he was tired. I should have known that he would tell me he was tired. I never get any time to do it.
Wait, hold on just a sec.
Could you feel yourself heating up then?
Yes.
Okay. Clearly, we've hit on something that's really important to you. Is it right? Okay. Let's take this as an opportunity for a minute. Just close your eyes and focus in on how angry you're feeling. Can you feel it boil? Is that how you're feeling in the mall? Yeah. Okay. Now, let your mind float back to some time earlier in your life when you had that same kind of rage. What comes to mind?
My father.
What do you see?
My mother and father arguing with each other and not listening to me.
So they're busy arguing with each other, and you're feeling more and more frantic because they're just not listening to you. Yeah. That's that same feeling. Can you open your eyes for a second now? You did a good job of just zeroing right in on what was the same in the past and the same then and the same this weekend. What was your concern as a little girl in that scene? What was it that you wanted from them?
On to be important.
Does that ring a bell for what happened between the two of you at the mall?
Yeah. Your head going up and down makes it real clear. Okay, stop. Just a sec.
That's what I refer to as depth diving. That is, you take as your key a moment of intensity. And you use that to do, like, as a swimmer does a surface dive, that is, they're swimming along the surface, and then they bend at the waist and go straight back, straight down. You can go zapping right down, pick up something from the unconscious or the past. That's a depth concern. And then pick it up. Now let's see where we go from there, because if you just pick up the early concern, that's not enough. You have to look at what's the same. That's that concern, and then put it in a context of what's different for the person to feel some real relief. Okay, so the piece that was the same there then at the mall was that feeling unimportant. Yeah, do you remember what what it was that happened that made you feel unimportant suddenly?
Well, there was something that I wanted to do, and he shot it down.
Mm-hmm. How did he shoot it down? Do you remember shooting it down?
It wasn't just that she wanted to get her hair cut.
Okay, I'm going to stop you just a minute. Have you noticed how much quieter his voice is now? There's a wonderful phenomenon that Greenberg, and I have the reference in the book, calls softening, which is that once you've explored in a deeper way what somebody's concern is when they were upset, the other person hearing it, softens. That means it really is something that went on in that person, not just his fault that he has to defend against. And he can understand and his empathy is pulled. So he softened. Okay. So how do you remember what the comment was that set her off?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was not just that she wanted to get her hair cut, but that she wanted me to come back and pick her up. And the comment, the return comment, I simply said that I wasn't her chauffeur.
Uh-huh. Do you remember how you said it? You sound so sweet about it now.
Yeah, I was angry.
Mm-hmm.
I was sarcastic.
Sarcastic?
Yeah.
Want to give me a little illustration? Do you remember?
I simply said, I'm not your chauffeur.
Does that sound like what happened? Was that what triggered
your... Mild.
That's a mild word. Is that what triggered that panic back into that feeling of that anger? Yeah. Okay. Let's see where that was coming from in you, Hal. Can you get back into that moment there? Do you remember what came up for you then? Where that sudden sniping came?
Yeah.
But,
it seems like I spent my whole life answering the needs of other people.
Uh-huh.
My mother.
What made you think of your mother just then?
Well, I just... She always asked. She's always asking. I mean, she's still always asking for things.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. Just always asks for things.
She always asks for things, but that's not my problem.
Wait. Hold on just for a minute. What makes sense about what Hal was just saying? Does she ask for things of you, too? Is she a difficult person?
Does she ask things of me?
Yeah.
No.
Does she seem to demand a lot of Hal?
Yeah, I guess she does.
Okay, let's stop. What we've been looking at is to get some symmetry, to dive down for her underlying issues and also dive down for his. And you can pretty much always make an assumption that a couple gets in trouble when they have interlocking underlying concerns, deeper concerns that have been hit. Because if you had issues about being asked to be a chauffeur and you sniped at her and it came out of the blue... But you didn't have issues about being ignored or not important or whatever. If you were generally a more resilient person, you might say something like, where did that come from? You must be getting really tired. You would not. So in order for the fight to happen, there has to be an interlocking on both sides. And that's why as a therapist, it's so important that we look for what's going on both sides. Now, the tendency as therapists is to look at the person who was aggressive, who was the most angry sounding, and look for what they were responding to, and not to pick up on that the person who collapsed, if it's an angry, depressive interaction, also has issues. Why did they give up then instead of just saying, hey, what's going on here? There was a question back there.
Yeah, I was in both of these exchanges, it was taken out of the room. And I wonder if it ever happens where it intensifies the conflict, like where it was everything that she's been doing for the last 5 years or something.
Where the fight happens within the room.
If he were to say, you know, like she always asked me to do this, I chauffeured her this year or that year.
Right. The part three of what we're going to do today is going to focus on when they're fighting right in there. So I will come back to that question. for now, what we did was take an incident that happened out there. In general, that's not as useful as dealing with something that's going on between them there. The issues that I personally find most satisfying are when they can define an issue. You know, we've got to talk about whether we're going to have children or not. Or we need to talk about whether you're going to change jobs. Those are the nice, clean, easy sessions, and you can facilitate relatively easy the good process. A somewhat harder session, I think, is when they had a fight out there. It still needs to get resolved somehow. So what I'm using this now to show you is techniques for exploring the part two, for exploring the underlying concerns with an up depth that you can really get to the heart of the matter. Okay, now let's look at some other pieces that you might want to do. And this is not like a typical session in that we're doing a fragment here, a fragment there. What we just did schematically in 3 minutes would probably take 10 or 15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes, could be even more, could be less. But what we're looking at is how do you, as therapists, do that guiding process and access data that's deeper? And the technique of visualizing in order to get back to earlier material, because the earlier material is linked by a similar feeling or a similar meaning. That's the key. And I want to add one other thing about those moments. Lester Luborsky looked at transference and watched lots of therapy sessions and recorded the issues that were brought up either in transference towards the therapist or in upsets that happened between the patient and lots of other people in her life over a series of weeks. And what he found was each patient had a small number of what he called core conflicts or core concerns, certain issues that just kept coming up over and over again. What we've hit on here in doing a depth dive, usually what you come up with are the patient's core concerns. So Heidi had a core concern about being treated as unimportant. Now, it's a danger that we can translate those core concerns into our language. There wasn't any separation, or the mother was narcissistic or something. We have to be careful not to do that, but rather listen to the core concern in her language, because that's the form it's going to keep coming up over and over again in her life. And we know that the resolution of that conflict that they had in the shopping mall is going to require her to be reminded that she is important. So that's the nugget that we've picked up, the core concern. And we're going to find out that he is very sensitive to being demanded of.
Yes.
Yeah. To being treated as a servant. And then the couple needs to know that those are core concerns, and any time they come up, their partner's going to need reassurance about that. So the solution that's important to the shopping mall incident, just to give this one some closure, is going to have two levels of solution. One, they need to figure out what would have been a practical solution to whether she was going to stay and get her hair cut and he was going to come pick her up or not. On a deeper level, how are they going to reassure each other that their relationship is not master-servant and is not to be ignored? So that's that piece that I was referring to earlier when we say we look at not only what was the same between the past and the present, but what's different. So I'm going to go back into the role of therapist. Okay, can you join me as patients again? Well, Heidi, I can see that was really painful, growing up feeling consistently unimportant and like you didn't count, and that inadvertently Hal's response at the shopping mall triggered that again. What are some times when you do feel important with Hal?
Well, I felt important when he took me out to dinner or just earlier in the evening.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like that was a day when really you had a lot of hours of feeling attended to and important.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and how about for you, Hal? Are there some times when you and Heidi get along in a way where you don't feel like it's demands, where it feels like something else?
Yeah, most of the day was spent that way.
Uh-huh. How do you feel as you think about those other times, each of you?
Good.
Good. Uh-huh, I saw you smiling at her. Can you see the pattern of what we're doing with exploring underlying concerns then? We're beginning to meet their concerns by just expanding their database. Okay. Let's go on, and though, in order to finish up that incident, let's look at some other things you could have done if you hadn't gotten into that angry mode. If you were in that nicer mode that you often are with each other, and you must have been all that day, how could you have talked through that incident? What were you wanting, Heidi?
I wanted to get my hair cut.
Okay, and what was it that you were wanting?
I just wanted to get home.
Yeah.
And not have to come back out again.
So what would have been a way that you could have gotten a haircut and you could have gone home? The problem was you needed a ride home? Mm-hmm. How could you have done that?
You could have taken me home. I could have called a taxi.
I could have called a taxi. Well, when I was finished with my haircut.
Okay. So once you two calm down, it looks like there's a lot of solutions that come to mind. Okay. The point is you want to bring things to closure. And I think if there's one place where I think psychoanalytic treatment modalities really fall short, it's in this last step. That somehow those of us, and I put me in there, who were trained to do psychodynamic thinking, did a lot of exploring at what underlying issues were. We didn't realize that just insight wasn't enough, that you had to then take the next step. Okay, so how are we going to get that need met? Okay, any questions on that? That was a quickie example of some techniques you would use in the guiding phase on an issue. Let's move on to some quick examples of when you do coaching. Now, coaching's kind of fun, because most of the time, if you're going to do coaching of the skills, people are in a good mood. They're not upset. Otherwise, there's two kinds of coaching. There's one where you're just kind of setting the rules. So a real hot couple at the beginning, you're going to need to set a lot of rules with them. But there's also an excitement with the coaching that comes with learning things. For instance, if you think back in the last hour when we were doing the business with Butt, it's kind of fun. It's like solving a puzzle to figure out what Butt does. You can do that with patience. That's a real important exercise. This is how I structure that. Okay, they've just done something and they've been doing Butt. This Butt, I think, is really getting you in trouble. Let's do a little exercise for a minute. You tell me something. Just tell me anything about the day, the room, whatever.
The blue is a really soothing color, the blue of the walls.
Uh-huh. It's a soothing color, but I find it disgusting. What did you feel when I said that?
I felt like you threw away my observation about blue.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what the butt does. Let's try with you, what it does on you. Can you tell me something? Anything?
I feel very comfortable right now.
Mm-hmm. You feel comfortable, but you don't look so comfortable. What did that butt feel like to you?
Makes you feel like S-H-I-T.
So what happened to that nice feeling you were expressing?
It was gone.
Yeah, just erased it. Exactly.
Okay. That gets a point across pretty quickly.
So the coaching phases of treatment follow the principles of any good teaching or coaching. Break the skills up into small chunks. Make it easy at first to master the small chunks. Gradually string the chunks together until you have the sequences of the behavior that you want. I took violin lessons for years and years. And when you are learning a new piece on the violin, you take the difficult passages, you take it just a few notes at a time, and then the next few notes, and then you put together so you have, say, six notes all at once. And when you can do that mini chunk, then you do three notes and then three notes and put those six notes together, and then you string the whole 12 together. That's how you learn. And I think as
Psychologists, we tend to ignore how much of our work needs to be teaching or coaching. And we don't do the breakdown into specific sub-skills. And then we don't do the drills and the repetitions that people need in non-threatening situations in order to build those skills. We can't very well work on but versus and when they're in the middle of a hot topic. The time to do it is when things are kind of calm and you can use artificial situations. Let's look at how we begin to build that up into a total sequence of bilateral listening. One skill would be we did the but. Another skill, which we mentioned earlier, was listening for what's right with instead of what's wrong with. Let's do a little drill with that. This time, you're going to say something, and then you're going to first respond with old think and tell her what's wrong with what she said. And then the second time we're going to do it, you're going to say the same thing, Heidi, and you're going to respond with what makes sense about what she said. Okay. Say something about what's gone on in your world in the last day or two. One sentence.
School was difficult for me yesterday.
That's silly. It's one of the easiest days we've had.
Mm-hmm. How's that going to make you feel?
Like my idea doesn't count, or like my opinion doesn't count.
Okay, so if you were that patient who consistently felt unimportant, boy, you can see how he'd inadvertently been feeding into it. Okay, let's do the same thing, and this time listen for what makes sense about what you said.
I had a difficult day at school yesterday.
I found it very hard to watch the project also.
Okay, so what he did was to take a piece of what she had said, and without automatically reiterating it, he built on it. He added what the also and what his experience was at that time. Now, there was a phase that I think we all went through where we learned about empathic listening, active listening, that was the phrase. You're supposed to repeat what the other person said. The trick with all these little exercises is to explain to people that these are exercises. It's not exactly how it flows in reality, but that the point of the exercise is that you take a chunk of what she said and then add on to it. The point is just, as soon as you see them missing a skill, identify it, and then be creative. Think of some little exercise that's going to take just that little mini piece, do it in a non-threatening content. And as they get that idea, then you can begin to build it into their repertoire as they're discussing real things. Okay, that's the process of coaching. Let's call it quits for now on part two, which is those skills that we're using on the basic coaching and guiding. And give you a couple minutes to stand up and shake out. It's real hot in here. And then we're going to go to part three, which is what do we do when they actually stop fighting?
This concludes part two of the lecture series, Working with Couples in Conflict, Essential Skills.